welcome to another edition of our Parenting Pathway podcast. This is Pastor Dave Carl. I am the Children's and Family Pastor here at Stonebriar Community Church, and I am joined with, and I'm going to start on my right now because somebody has their mouth full of food, Nathan Kosurek.
It's so exciting. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, I thought you were excited that David was still chewing.
That's pretty exciting, but...
And Nathan is our high school pastor here at Stonebriar Community Church, and I'm going slow so that...
We're good.
You have cleared your palate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
And welcoming Pastor David Ake, who is our...
Junior high pastor.
Junior high pastor and adventurer par excellence. We are continuing our discussion on John Eldridge's book, The Way of the Wild Heart. And I'm going to open up our session right now with a quote, as we have done in the past. John will say here, "For it is an essential truth of life to know and appreciate the fact that the universe does not find you at its center. Rather, it demands things of you, requires you to live within its limits. No matter how much you wail and bellow, the rain will fall, summer will pass into winter, and a 2x4 will hurt you if you drop it on your toe. Welcome to reality. Learn to live within it. How much more true this is for a man before his God. You are loved immensely, and you must obey. That is the secret to lesson one in the Christian book of spirituality. You are loved, you must obey." I feel like I should drop the mic right now.
That's good stuff.
That's
pretty much right after. Yeah. You can't beat that one.
So the reality, I've heard reality defined as what happens to you when you ignore it.
Yeah, good one.
You run into a brick wall, you will experience reality in very demanding ways. Hmm. You jump off a cliff that's too high and the boy jumps off a barn roof, mm-hmm. You experience reality. And... We were talking about it a little bit last time, but play is the opportunity to ideally practice some of these things with small experiences with reality, hopefully.
So like engaging reality in bite sizes.
Yeah. So I worked very hard on this thing and it collapsed on me. I didn't lose my job. I'm nine.
Yeah.
I wrestled with my dad, and he always wins. That's kind of makes perfect sense. And there's the salient moment in every boy's life when he is playing basketball or fill in the sport of, you know, your preference. And you legitimately, not pretend, when you legitimately beat your dad.
Don't say it.
That's a boy. That's the moment a boy is now... Does that mean I'm a man? You know, there's a tipping point there. Yeah. Now, if that happens when he's five, he knows that wasn't real. And you can't take credit for it, no matter what the dad says. So I don't think you want that to happen too soon. It just needs to be true, because that would be reality. I have exercised enough. I have grown tall enough. I have practiced my sport long enough. And I remember the time my boy, who lifts weights, and he's... You know, that's a beefy boy. When he told me that he was stronger than me. And I bowed up and I was ready to go back at him. And I thought,
what if he's right?
I think I'm just going to sit down right now. I think he can bench press me. So, but it was hard for me.
You got to keep the psychological edge.
Do you have one?
Oh,
I remember it. We were doing a church softball game.
Yeah.
And I struck out my dad.
Oh,
I was 14.
That was the moment.
Yeah. And I danced. and I took it too far. But it was a meaningful moment. Like, it's still etched in my mind.
I was taking it the other way. My teenager recently beat me in a game of chess, like really beat me, mm-hmm. when I was trying. And of course, I didn't want him to know I was really trying.
So, I mean, just as an aside, this is a moment that dads rather dread.
Yeah.
But if you have been laboring to get your boy to enter into manhood, this is...
Yeah.
He's crossed if not the finish line, he's crossed a milestone. This is a good sign. And you know, perhaps you might want to say to your boy, one day when you do whoop me bad, don't dance around. Don't write a song about it. But for that dad to be prepared, like, no, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to celebrate this with him. Because that's not instinctive. I'd have to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Normally I would say, well, my back is, you know, try to diminish his win, but that would be foolish. So you are loved and you must obey.
Hmm. Yep. Pretty much summarizes it.
Yeah. What a great balance of, you know, I think something you're going to introduce here in a bit of the sweat equity that goes into freedom and love. And we can't get away from that. So
the next in this, you know, this is two pages later in his book on page 73. Discipline, after all, is ultimately the means to freedom. I thought that was a well-crafted and surprising statement. My boys don't clean their rooms so that they can do it again. They clean their rooms so that they can go play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've thought the freedom that an Olympic diver has to climb to what in essence is the top of a three-story building and what looks rather, I mean, they you know, there's nothing reckless about it, but they run, they throw a full flip before they pass the platform that they started on.
Hmm.
And then they do two more. I mean, they're now, they've hit critical speed. They're going as fast as they're going to go, and they hit the water, and if they hit it wrong, it's going to be very close to concrete.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't hit it wrong. They slice right through. That kind of freedom, I will never experience.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on the word freedom, and I think I see where you're going with the connection to responsibility and the discipline that it takes to become proficient. This is really my favorite section of this book, and he talks about stages of manhood, but the cowboy stage or whatever, you know, term you want to use to describe it is really one that resonates deeply with me, this coming of age, rite of passage, going from boy to man is really what makes me get up in the morning excited to come to work, because I get to work with teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think about kind of his description of this stage as a progression of increasing freedom and responsibility.
And one without the other,
bad news,
is dangerous for everybody.
Like hitting the surface of the water and you're not prepared.
I should have written this down. I could bring it up on my Kindle, but the comedian woodworker.
Oh, Ron Swanson. Ron Swanson's the character he plays on the show
Parks and Rec.
All right. Our research team is going to be looking this up while I speak. The gentleman who plays Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec is in real life.
Nick Offerman.
Nick Offerman is a real life woodworker / comedian / philosopher. And he was talking about when he was a boy and his dad was, they were building stuff. And he pulled out his hammer and there were men around and he whacks the hammer. Or he swings the hammer and he misses the nail completely.
Yeah.
And the guys just kind of frown and they didn't say much. They just turned away like, you failed. And he worked and worked and worked. And when he was proficient, they left him alone.
That's how he knew.
They didn't throw him a party. They're like, you're good enough now. I'm going to go take care of something.
Hmm.
And he... that moment, he felt like, I think if I'm not all the way in, I'm sort of in the club now,
because mm-hmm.
they respect me for something that I have achieved. And
yeah, they respect me enough to include me in the tribe.
And it took practice. It looked took discipline, and it was work. And I think the thing of work And David, before we started recording, you made a statement about work and working hard versus work.
Yeah, you know, in that, as he's talking in that chapter about the balance of adventure and hard work, there's a lot of kids or people that you would say, hey, you need to learn hard work. And they'll tell you, of course I work hard. Like, I pursued this personal interest very hard and had to sweat to get there. The problem is, or the statement we were looking at this morning was, can you do hard work and never learn to work hard? That working hard has several characteristics to it. Humility that comes from failing. And not necessarily being celebrated when you achieve it, that you do it for its discipline's sake. And two, resiliency, that you learn to just not quit at it until the job is done and done well. So there's plenty of people that work hard but never learn how to do hard work. Mm-hmm. And the way that you can tell is they fold, not that they don't put a little sweat in it, they just can't stand not getting praised for it, or they can't stand failing, or they quit before it's done and it's done well.
Mm, that's good.
And so rather than condemning that, that would awaken us to, oh, wait, that's, you know, we need to revisit this cowboy stage in their life. They need to learn that joyful discipline, that graceful art of hard work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, all you need to do is watch a John Wayne movie or two, mm-hmm. ideally the Cowboys, mm-hmm. the movie, where he's got a bunch of boys. He can't hire enough men to move his cattle. They're all gone on a gold rush. I can't recall exactly why, but so he hires like 9 to 15-year-old boys to do a man's job. And so it's a wonderful coming of age, and that's the only John Wayne movie that he dies in.
Oh, wow.
But
well known fact.
But this process, they were working hard for a clear and larger purpose. They weren't working so that they could get into the band.
Yeah, make themselves happy.
Or become a star. Mm-hmm. They were working because my family needs this money mm-hmm. when I get home. I'm not going to buy a go-kart with this. And he needs, and when he did die, they came back and gave his widow now. I mean, that's an essential part of, I'm doing hard work, sacrificial work that
has real significance
for somebody else.
Yeah.
And then when something comes up in the future, I absolutely have confidence I can manage that because mm-hmm. I've done it before. And to have a generation of kids who only work for themselves, for their own benefit, mm-hmm. when they meet the reality of life, which demands that you do something long and hard, and you're not going to get recognized. Mm-hmm. They're not going to ask you to be in management the first 2 years of your job out of college.
Yeah,
you have to actually do the work.
Yeah,
for a long time, and feel good about yourself at the end of the day. Like, I worked hard today. Nobody noticed but me, and I'm feeding my family. That's plenty, mm-hmm. and that would be freedom. I am not depressed because I'm not being recognized. I'm not ready to quit because they're not listening to my ideas. I'm taking care of my family. I don't.
Yeah, there's the significance. Yeah, it's interesting when you think about the unintended pitfalls of prosperity and
absolutely.
The environment in which boys are growing up in this culture. You know, we really have to look for ways to introduce adversity and really try to introduce adversity in things that really matter, you know, not just adversity for its own sake as a exercise in overcoming adversity.
Right, because that doesn't sound purposeful.
Nope.
Like, be tough so you can be tough.
Right.
I've got better things to do than that. I need you to be tough so that we can take care of the family or the neighbors or, mm-hmm. oh, well, that's something else entirely.
Yeah, it feels real.
I remember what you shared a while back about, you know, there's no conquering army over the hill, so learn this discipline. So having some things that are purposeful, that are adversity, but to build endurance and purpose, are is way different than just making things tough for your kid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just mean.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I keep moving the bar so that you can't reach it. That's uh-huh. just nasty.
Yeah.
But let's do something, and purpose, the word purpose means all kinds of things to me. I mean, without it, we're undone. If you have a stupid one, you're deceived.
Yeah.
If you have a good purpose, I mean, this is why men go to war. This is why men go into uncharted territory and build cabins in the middle of mm-hmm. they're going to do something for their family and the next generations that aren't even born yet. They're willing to take these risks, work that hard, yeah. and every day when they go to bed, like, maybe wish I had gotten a little more done, but I did well today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this next statement that I'm going to read from the book, I think kind of crosses back into the, do I believe that God is for me, that he is, and by that I don't mean out there to make me happy. Mm-hmm. He wants the best for me. So this will fold into some of that. Discipline, John Eldridge would say, discipline is simply to keep our sin from destroying all the life God wants for us. Life is the point. Now that flips obedience on its head.
Yeah.
So if I'm in the ninth grade, expert high school pastor.
Okay.
What is a ninth grade boy, for instance, his worldview on obedience?
Yeah, so he doesn't get caught and get in trouble, right? That's the reason why you have to follow the rules. I think that, you know, there are a lot of exceptional ninth grade boys who understand.
I was one.
Well, of course, that's what I was getting at. That's what I was about to say, that there are boys who understand their purpose. They have a dream, a significant vision for their life and what they're trying to accomplish and what they're trying to do. But I think that most of us at that age are probably looking forward to the next self-gratifying form of entertainment that you can imagine. So whether it's hanging out with your friends on the weekend or whatever you are looking forward to, that seems to be the small purpose. And what ends up happening is guys never grow out of that adolescence, yep. right? They're always living for the weekend or living for a small purpose.
And I love this statement because it implies that God has amazing just waiting for us, and he's calling us to it. And if we would be courageous enough to do the things necessary, we would walk into, I mean, fill in the metaphor, that mm-hmm. a treasure trove or an open field with maverick horses to you know, the stuff of your hopes and dreams. Mm-hmm. We have been deceived to think that I have amazing dreams for myself. God wants me to have about 12% of that.
Right.
And the 12%, I don't even like.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Learning that his plan is better than anything you could ever hope for or imagine.
And that would be such an amazing thing to pursue as a dad, is I want my boys to believe that God has stuff that he can't wait to give me if I'm just prepared enough to not harm myself with it.
Right.
And you know, sex would be one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we feel like he's withholding from, this is Eve, he's withholding something from me. I have to take it myself.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning of
yeah, it's the lie.
Every problem and every separation
yeah,
from God.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I love how that statement weaves behavior to, like, the lower story and the upper story. The things that they are doing every day, or the things that we would do every day, to an eternal purpose. But not just because you know, we've had plenty of teenagers look us in the eye and go, well, here's why I'm doing it. It's for me. It's to make me happy. It's to satisfy my desires. Discipline in that form of working towards something greater than yourself.
Yeah.
It's like gives it the broader expanse that it needs to be poignant, to be, I'm getting lost in my words here, but the idea that the reward is something that ties us to God's heart.
Hmm.
That there's a real benefit to it, to things that are eternal versus just, well, you did it and you got the prize.
Yeah, and it's hard to get to that, you know? I mean, it's hard to convince someone of that. I've had this conversation multiple times with my own kids and trying to tie the everyday mundane responsibilities to a larger, bigger purpose and how we can please God in you know, fulfilling our responsibilities. But that doesn't always translate.
That's hard. I mean, because they're so concrete.
Right.
So if I go on a diet, can I eat everything I want on Saturday? Oh, you've missed the point.
Yeah.
That's how I operate. But that just makes the discipline of not eating what I want just a whooping.
Right.
Now, you talk to someone who wants to run fast and cross country. They're not thinking about, I can't do, they're thinking about what they want to do.
Yeah.
That is what I'm after. The losing weight is going to happen. That's a function of what I want to pursue.
Yeah. Yeah, and you want someone to see their preferred future, right? So if it's discipleship or whether it's your kids, you're trying to paint this picture of what their life could be, and including God's purpose as that main thing, and hopefully that fuels their determination and their reason for living a more disciplined life.
And I think as a group, we as Christians pretty awful at that.
Yeah.
So I've got, you know, I'm just using a ninth grade boy in my head. So my son, my plan for you is that you not do a bunch of fun stuff. You work really hard so that you don't get in trouble. And then one day you get to go to work every day and come home tired and still not do the really fun things that you want to do.
That's how we sell abstinence to teenagers, unfortunately.
who's going to sign up for this?
Yeah.
We do not paint the picture of the amazing that is out ahead of you. You get to go do stuff in the power of God.
Yeah.
But you have to not be soiled by all of this stuff. You need to not be so damaged by your sin. And if you were, you can be redeemed from that. But what God has for us is categorically bigger, better, more adventurous, more dangerous, mm-hmm. more heartbreaking, and more awe-inspiring than anything we could come up with on our own. And that requires art and music and stories and, you know, how to give that to a boy should be one of our chief goals.
Yeah.
Is to give them a huge vision for their own future that would make self-sacrifice obviously important.
Yeah, I don't think it's that foreign to us. Like, it sounds like this impossible task, but we all have a desire for adventure. You know, there's that you know, explorer inside all of us that wants to go off in some exciting quest or mission, and so I think our job as spiritual fathers or literal fathers is to you know, paint that picture of what that quest looks like with Christ, you know, and the mission of Christ in the world, you know, inspiring mission adventure in younger people, I think is a big part of what we get to do.
He's got, John Eldridge has a comment here about how that can go south. The quickest way to kill the spirit of the boy is through a rigid moralism which lacks any spontaneity adventure, or freedom. For the boy is both a cowboy and a warrior in the making, and as such, he needs adventure and dangers in order to thrive. When we provide them, far above and beyond discipline, we develop things in the boy he will later need, things like courage and curiosity, and we demonstrate that we know and love his heart.
Mm-hmm.
So if what we're painting for them is, if you work hard, you can get a good job and buy a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
That is a very low.
Too low. It's too small.
Yeah.
And the details of what the picture might, I think we just need to, it needs to be pretty broad, because I don't know what my kid's going to do when he grows up.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell him what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Now, I want to inflame his heart.
Right. And I have heard of this going south another way. A friend of mine said that his dad, great dad, had a love for God and a thirst for mission adventure, to the point where they went on short-term mission trips together all through his growing up years. But the unintended consequence was that when he became an adult, he felt literally like the weight of the world right. was on his shoulders, that it was up to him, because his dad had done such a great job of inspiring this big mm-hmm. mission that is all of our responsibility as followers of Christ to reach the world with the gospel, that he lives with this perpetual sense of guilt, you know, or like inadequacy, that he cannot do enough to save the whole world, mm-hmm. you know?
Did he ever say if his father shared his own fears or, you know, where he perceived himself as not achieving? Did he ever indulge in those stories with him as
no,
well?
No.
Yeah, I wonder.
Not at all.
Just that, because you're right, in the dynamic of pursuing this, as Christians were famous for looking for systems, the authenticity of, kind of back to what you mentioned in the previous chapter, of the time together, I delight in you, of knowing truly both your father's successes and your father's fears and failures, and having a good balanced, balance is a tricky word, but a holistic view of, my father was a man trying to figure it out as well.
Yeah.
That creates what he's going to refer to in this next chapter as that resolve, I have to look at the phrase, settled confidence.
Settled confidence. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like I know my dad did great things for me and he failed and I'm okay with it. I'm good with both sides of who he was.
The next statement here, there's an old African, this is from the book, there's an old African proverb that goes like this: I hear, I forget, I see, I remember, I do, I understand. So at least in my circles that I've grown up in, it's very academically skewed.
Yeah, right.
So we want our boys to become men. Well, what's the curriculum?
Yeah, we're going to sit around in a circle and talk about the curriculum.
And I know you two, we at this table, we have all experienced the magic of the campfire
mm-hmm.
out in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
There is just, I don't know, there's something magical sitting mm-hmm. in the dark, ideally playing with a stick that's on fire on the far end.
Yeah.
You got to play with the fire.
Yeah.
And you're not looking at each other. You're nope. staring at the fire or up at the stars, and you start talking, and you start telling stories, and there's something magical about physically being away from your normal circumstances, and if there is a wise person around that campfire to ask a few questions, or, as you were just saying, let me tell you a little bit about my story.
Hmm.
When I was your age, what I was afraid of more than anything else, dot, 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 and in the dark, mouths fall open, like, I didn't think you were afraid of anything. And then they might, you know, because they're not staring at you. Mm-hmm. They're going to stick their toe in the water and see if it's safe. And if it is, somebody else. But the prospect of, this is not an academic problem to be solved academically. Mm-hmm. We want boys and men to be something that they've not been, So that requires us going and doing things with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think about how Jesus walked around with that group of men for 3 years, and it wasn't only instruction. It was a lot of demonstration, and it was a lot of discussion, and it was a lot of giving them some opportunities for their own experiences. And I do like to imagine some campfire chats between Jesus and his disciples, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think that those chats were always necessarily super serious.
Oh, somebody's cracking a joke. Somebody's doing something rude.
I wonder who it was that said, "Hey, remember the time Jesus forgot the food?" Not that he did, but yeah. Anybody had the guts to say it that way?
Right.
But I find that kind of surprising, but so obvious that this is not the stuff that you do in a church on Wednesday night around a table with plastic chairs.
Mm-hmm.
It is best done running around hot. Maybe you just cooked and burnt the chili mac or whatever on the campfire. You're physically experiencing all kinds of stuff. You're tired. You've got blisters, perhaps, because you hiked in, and that's stuff that is remembered for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially,
and these adventures where things go wrong.
Yes.
Are usually the ones that are most poignant in their mind.
And we survived, and we hiked, and then they'll brag about it later.
Yep.
They were whining, you know, at the time. But this is the process. Like, I kind of collapsed, but when we actually made, I wanted a helicopter to come get me, but we actually had to hike out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when are we going to do that again next year? And it's the second one is a very different experience.
Yeah.
And for us to not allow risk and discomfort, mm-hmm. we are hamstringing, not just the boys, the girls too.
Mm-hmm.
I think occasionally about being in a novel situation. Now, if I've done something 12 times before and then it happens the 13th time, I feel confident.
Sure.
I know what to do.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys. I am constantly in situations that I have never been
yes.
in conversations.
Called parenthood.
And absolutely. And if you figured it out with the first kid,
yeah,
newsflash,
get ready. It won't be the same.
The second one, God has just got
as
a sense of humor.
Child, we're born cracking our knuckles. Come on.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So how to have our kids grow up confident of the next novel situation, they have some resources to pull from. Like, I know I can endure it.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who their big answer is, I'll just work it through. I mean, like, their superpower is, I don't mm-hmm. care what it is.
Yeah.
I'll just work it to death.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, that can go crazy, but what a great life skill to have is, if it's hard, that doesn't bother me.
That's a textbook definition of resiliency right
yes.
there.
Yes.
And what Eldridge's main point in like all of his books is that you know you have what it takes, right? That's the heart cry of every man is, do I have what it takes?
Mm-hmm. So not only did somebody tell me I'm a man, but do I feel like I'm a man in my own skin?
Yeah.
And I think there's a corollary that I can, you know, and it can be in different categories. I mean, I couldn't fix my car. Cars these days, I don't even know their spark plugs are, but I can't. I'm not a car guy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other stuff I absolutely can take care of, and that feels a part of manhood to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think perhaps some of this work thing is with your boys and with these young men, I like to be with guys and do things that I know how to do, and I enjoy. I'm kind of an instinctive teacher, so I just enjoy doing that. And they learn something, and I think my next step is, all right, your turn.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got? What do you do? And I'll go with you.
Yeah, watch them do it.
And but it's that the physicality, I think, is important,
mm-hmm.
and which means blisters.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a backpack trip, and I can't remember what went wrong, if somebody forgot something, but we had a dinner of I don't even know if they still have the Pilot Crackers, which is a little bit less nutritional value than cardboard.
Okay. How's it
taste? There's not salt on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's no frosting on it.
It's like Melba toast.
Yes, it was, and that was our dinner, and we were mad at somebody. I can't remember what they forgot. They left something behind, and that was our dinner. But here I am, you know, fondly recalling this humorous time of suffering that we got through, and we probably stopped at Carl's Jr. on the way home in the car. But hardship, and I tell guys who are in trouble often, it's okay to be sad. Because so many young men are terrified of being sad. But it's also okay if it's hard.
Yeah.
It's okay. You can do this.
That was a huge point he makes in this section of the book. He's talking about the sense of self-respect you gain from knowing that you have worked very hard and accomplished something that required more of you than you even knew you had the ability to give, you know?
That is the stuff of great stories.
Yeah. And it's interesting because he, right there, that quote where he says, for masculine initiation is not a spectator sport. It's something you have to be entered into. It's one part instruction and nine parts experience. Yeah. So a golden nugget of information, which is important, has to be balanced by extensive experience.
That's right.
And that's the fun stuff. You get to carry weapons. You get to go out into the woods. You get to build stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the fun stuff.
It reminds me of the summer job that I had when I was 19. This whole section of this book was reminding me of this experience where I went to work for my uncle and I was alone. He gave me the keys to his old beat up truck and a sledgehammer and a chain. And he said,
sounds like the beginning of a joke.
Yeah. What do you get when you cross the, you get a real tired Nathan, because I drove out to his property where he had purchased some land out in the country. And it had all these old, broken down sharecropper housing out there that needed to be, deconstructed and hauled off to the burn pile so that he could do something new with that land. And so that was my job for about 9 weeks in the South Texas heat of midsummer, where...
How hot does that get out there?
It gets pretty hot. And so there I had...
Satan was wiping his brow there with a napkin. Like,
you guys, the first 30 seconds with the sledgehammer was a lot of fun. After that,
the fun
water.
It was the pickup truck and the chain. And I was dragging those planks of wood out to that wood pile and trying to get the truck as close to that burn pile as possible so that I could throw the wood from the back of the truck into the bonfire without blowing myself up in the process, you know? And it was already hot. So anyway, at the end of the summer, I felt like I had proved something to myself, and really there was no one else around. It was just me and the hot, you know, Texas sun.
That's a country western song in the making.
Right. You point out something that's probably, you know, if you're listening to this and you're looking for ideas, the timeless phrase, I hauled this off to the burn pile.
Yeah.
If that's included.
Right.
If you have that statement somewhere in your life, that's a good thing.
Right. Grab hold of that.
There's all sorts of ingenuity. I remember we used to have to chop down and haul off grapefruit trees.
Uh-huh.
And we figured out, because you couldn't stop. We would take a break. And so if we grabbed ground beef, like patties, frozen ones, and wrapped them in foil, between loads, you could shove it right in the coil, in the coals, and do one more load and just grab it as dad's driving the truck off. And you got to run and jump in the back again to get to the next one. And of course, you're bouncing your hands because it's hot. You know, you're trying to eat it on the way.
So. Nice.
So, yeah. I don't know if that'll work inside the city limits, but it's a good thing to
that's the problem.
Things off of the burn pile.
All right. I'm going to do it to you again.
All right.
It's time to close out.
Yeah.
I'll start with David this time, since the second guy has to fight a little harder. So a summary statement of our conversation here today.
Yeah, you know, we what struck me and what spoke to my heart was definitely that as you transition from the security of love, the beloved son,
to moving into a season of adventure, and that that adventure is purposeful, but it's not reckless. It comes with learning the balance of working hard, but pushing out beyond yourself, and how just in those moments of risk, you see God at work. And so pursue adventure and pursue adventure, but pursue adventure that truly draws out the depth of your soul rather than just a risk for adrenaline.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
And, you know, to add to that, for me, as a summary, discipline and hard work makes a lot more sense when you understand your mission and when you care about that mission, when you're personally invested in that mission. And so the change from boyhood to manhood is really this progression of striking out on your own journey into adventure and mission. Mm-hmm. And what a great job description we have as fathers or spiritual leaders, that we get to come alongside these young guys and help them make sense of this this mission and this exciting opportunity that they have to strike out on their own journey.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's not even a side road. Right in the center of that is spiritually. Mm-hmm. Everything that you would learn from adventuring and enduring and having a larger purpose, that is all true spiritually. If you don't know why, this is the first thing you're going to cast aside. But if your pursuit of God has been artistically crafted well enough for yourself that you can then hand it off to somebody else, then self-sacrifice so that I can be used by God makes perfect sense, and I'll do it in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. And so I think all those things about adventuring could be overlaid, or I don't even think it's that far away. I think it's the same stuff.
Same stuff.
The same life skills that you would learn to clear land is, well, I'm doing all this godly biblical stuff, and I'm not getting anything out of it.
Why?
Keep. Yeah. At it. Mm-hmm. This is not you. You've learned endurance there, and oh yeah, okay. I just didn't think of it like that.
Right.
So all of those skills are the same skills we need to pursue God, and not our topic. We'll be talking about this with the girls on the next podcast. Relationally, it's the same stuff. Hmm. How do you? Why would you continue to self-sacrifice getting? And I'm saying nothing in return.
Yeah.
If you don't know any of these, if you don't have any of this skill set, I've been in a relationship and I'm not getting anything out of it. I'm out.
No. Yeah.
Then I'm so spiritually, relationally, physically, career, these things are all the stuff of becoming men and of being men. Well, that'll end our episode today. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, David Ake. Thank you, Nathan Kosurek.
You're welcome.
And this concludes another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. I'm Dave Carl, Children's and Family Pastor here at Stonebriar Community Church. And remember, don't do parenting and don't do life alone.